All right, good afternoon, everyone. It is a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you at the luncheon. And a very special thank you to all of the organizers. It is so beautiful. I was just speaking with Leah the other day, and I remember a couple of years back when the Empty Nesters luncheon first started. This is back in our in the old shul in rooms 2 and 3, which then became the base medrash, the social hall. And it was like literally like a handful of people, you know, maybe 10, 12 people. And it's beautiful to see how this meaningful and beautiful program has expanded. It's also beautiful to see so many new faces, people who are regulars here at the shul, people who, you know, aren't yet regulars. I want to give a very special welcome to Mrs. Martyr, Baruch Hashem. And so again, the Martyr family are like pillars of our kehillah for decades and decades of leadership in our shul, of support of our shul. And Mr. Martyr Zichron Levracha was a beloved candy man in our shul for many years, and a fixture at every minyan, at every shir, at every board meeting, at every Shabbos. And I have no doubt that he would have very much enjoyed these kind of luncheons in this building as well. But Mrs. Martyr, it is such a pleasure, Baruch Hashem, to welcome you here. And we look forward, Emiras Hashem, to your participation in many programs for many years to come. Okay. All right, so last time that we got together, which seems like yesterday, but I guess it was a month ago. Okay, it's a little bit scary, but all right, so time flies, whether you're having fun or not. Whether you're having fun or not, time flies either way. It's amazing, right? It's amazing to think like how we're living in times where everything changes so quickly, right? The last time that we got together, so again, we were still, Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, were still in the midst of war, and we were focused on a war in which, you know, Gaza, the north, are hostages. And now it's amazing, like a couple of weeks later, and now again, another front to this war with Iran. But I think we all know also, as much as we daven and as much as we feel a certain sense of anxiety and fear and trepidation, but there's also a profound feeling of confidence. Because you know that Emirat Hashem, what's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks is a fundamental shift, a seismic shift in the Middle East. And it's a privilege that the state of Israel, the Jewish people, are the tip of the spear for bringing down the greatest state sponsor of global terrorism. And it's an incredible accomplishment for our people, which Emirat Hashem, one day, humanity will thank us. Actually, they probably won't thank us. But even if they don't thank us, they probably won't thank us. But even if they don't thank us, it's okay. We've learned a long time ago, we don't do things for gratitude. We do things because they are right. Anyway, last time we spoke, if you remember, again, I'm not going to quiz you. But if you remember, again, we spoke about a great Torah personality, a young man by the name of Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Right? And his tremendous journey through life. Again, essentially growing up ignorant of all Torah. Very wealthy, but ignorant of all Torah. And then ultimately, again, becoming the prized disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So this time, what I want to spend a few moments on is actually talking about the Rebbe. Not the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was one of the most crucial and pivotal personalities for us during the times of the second Beis HaMikdash. In fact, one could make the argument that because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, to a very large degree, we are here today. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was responsible for a number of different enactments. The enactments that we call things that we do, Zechar L'Chorban. So we have a number of practices in Judaism that we do to remember the destruction of the temple. Any suggestions? What are our examples of things we do? I'm sorry? Tisha B'Av. So it's the observance of Tisha B'Av itself. Good. Breaking glass under the chuppah. See, it's interesting, by the way. Often, that is the first thing that's mentioned, right? We break a glass under the chuppah. We also break something else at a wedding. What else do we break besides the bank, right? What else do we have? Plate, right? So interesting, those things are often linked. So I'll tell you something interesting. The breaking of the glass actually predates the destruction of the temple. The breaking of the glass actually is rooted in a Gemara in Maseches Brachos. Listen to this story. Story is told about a wedding. And the rabbis, there was a group of rabbis at the wedding, the leading rabbis, they got a little too boisterous. I guess they were hitting the shlivovitz a little too hard, you know? So what happened? So Rava, the great sage Rava, was there. Rava took a glass and he smashed it. What happens when you're somewhere and a glass smashes? What happens? It silences. So Rava felt that he needed to put a stop to what he perceived was evolving frivolity. And so he dropped the glass. He threw a glass down. that sparked the practice to break a glass at a wedding. And what that does is it tempers the simcha. It makes sure that the joy, the celebration remains appropriate. After the destruction of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, so then there's another layer of profundity that's attached to the breaking of the glass as well. It's interesting, by the way, why do parents break a, right? Parents break a plate at a chuppah, usually during the Tinaim. Why do they do that? Anyone know? What's the root of that?
That the marriage should never be like a broken plate.
The marriage should be like a broken plate. Beautiful. 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 Right? That is an aspiration that the couple should always be intact. Although it's interesting to give a bracha to a couple to remain intact and then break a plate. It sounds like a little bit contradictory. See, interestingly enough, the real root of that practice is the same thing as breaking of the glass. A chassan breaks the glass under the chuppah because there is an obligation to remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash at the pinnacle, at the height of one's joy. For a chassan and kala, the pinnacle, the height of their joy, ultimately is under the chuppah. Interestingly enough, for parents, the height of their joy at the wedding is actually at the Tinaim. The Tinaim, now for us, Tinaim is different, but it used to be Tinaim represented financial agreements that families entered into with one another. Now, in the Tinaim, essentially, when parents signed the Tinaim and they made good on their financial commitments, essentially what they were saying was, we're done. We're done. We have done everything and anything we can do for this boy, for this girl, for this man, for this woman. Now, it's time to leave the nest. And whatever you're going to make out of life, it's up to you. For a parent, when a parent brings their child to the chuppah and essentially enables them to move forward on their own, for a parent, that's the height, that's the pinnacle of their simcha. See, interestingly enough, that's why parents would break the plate by the tinaim. Okay, so good. We've got the breaking of the glass, breaking of the plate. Any other examples of practices that we engage in to remember the destruction of the temple? Not paid in a quarter. Good. So you see this much less in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, but in Israel you always see this, right? You walk in, and what do you see? An unfinished square. Usually about, it's supposed to be about a foot and a half by a foot and a half. A one square that remains unpainted in the home. Why is that? Also, Zecher L'Chorban, to remember the idea that Hashem's home is in a state of disrepair, and therefore our home is in a state of disrepair. Good. Any other examples? Any other examples? Zecher L'Chorban. So there's a whole bunch of things that we do. We put ashes on the head of the chassan, right? Why don't we put ashes on the head of the kala at a wedding? Why not? Everyone knows, don't mess with the kala's hair, right? That is more important than any halacha. And more important than any halacha, right? That's sakonas nefashos. That's mortal danger, right? So therefore, we put the ashes. Again, we eat eggs at the Pesach Seder. Why do we eat eggs at the Pesach Seder? An egg is the mourner's food. Because remember again, the Pesach Seder, and when we are, well, there's two reasons for that, but when we celebrate our freedom, we recognize that our freedom is incomplete in the absence of a temple. It also happens to be that the first night of Pesach is the same exact night, the same exact day of the week that Tisha B'Av is going to fall out on. All of those practices that we have, Zecher L'Chorban, all came from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. There's another parallel set of practices called Zecher L'Mikdash. Zecher L'Mikdash means practices that we do to remind ourselves of that which was done in the temple. So for example, the halacha is, how many days are you supposed to take Lulav and Esrog on Sukkot? How many days? One. Actually, excellent. One. Only one day. Right? One day. There was only one place where they would take Lulav and Esrog all 7 days, and that was the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Institute, after the destruction of the temple, he said, we take Lulav and Esrog all 7 days. Of course, we don't take it on Shabbos, but that's a secondary issue. But the idea is we take it all 7 days. All 7 days. Now, interestingly enough, these are two different sets of practices. The Zecher L'Churban, the practices to remember the destruction, are there to keep that pain present in our soul so that we should know exactly what we've lost and we should never lose sight of that loss. The Zecher L'Mikdash is to awaken within us an anticipatory desire to get the Beis HaMikdash back. So first set of practices is to remind us to mourn that which we have lost. And second set of practices is to remind us to yearn for that which we want so badly. That's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So if you think about it again, to this very day, he's responsible for all of those practices. Now, there's an incredible story. Listen to the story. The story is told that during the destruction of the Second Temple, there was a siege around Yerushalayim. That siege was created by a man by the name of Vespasian. Vespasian would later on go on to become Caesar of Rome. But this is before he's Caesar, he's General Vespasian, and he's in charge of the siege. Okay. Inside the Jewish people, there was a tremendous machlokes. That's the story of our people. There was one group that wanted armed conflict with the Romans. They said, let's fight. Let's fight. There was another group led by the Rabbanim that said, we can't fight. We're outnumbered. We're outmanned. We need to find a diplomatic solution. This was the machlokes. Correct. The Bar Yonim. Correct. So now, what happened? The Bar Yonim, the group who wanted war, recognized the only way they're going to convince people to fight is how. See, the problem was, Yerushalayim had a lot of food, a lot of provisions. So there was time to ride out the siege and work in a diplomatic solution. What did the Bar Yonim, what did the war faction do? They burnt down all of the silos of food. Can you imagine this? Self-sabotage. We've been doing this to ourselves for thousands of years. They burnt down all of the silos of food in an effort to plunge Yerushalayim into immediate famine and force the war option. What they also did was they prevented anyone from leaving Yerushalayim. You were not allowed to leave. There was only one way to get out of Yerushalayim, and that was in a casket, if you were dead. Because the halacha is, we do not bury the dead in the walls of Yerushalayim, even to this day, right? The closest cemetery to the old city of Yerushalayim is Har Aziz, Mount of Olives. And that, if you notice, but if you've ever been there, it's outside of the walls. You're not allowed to bury the dead within the walls of Yerushalayim. So the only way to get out of Yerushalayim was to go ahead and die, to be dead. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came up with a plan. He needed to get out of Yerushalayim because he needed to speak to Vespasian. But he couldn't get out. He couldn't get a meeting. So this is incredible. So he said to his students, here's the plan. You need to put out a rumor that I'm very ill. Okay? Put that out. Deathly ill. Then what I want you to do is take an animal carcass, put it under my bed. So it should smell like a rotting corpse. Pretend that he was dead. So they put him, right? So the word got out, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai died. They put him in a casket. They're taking him out of the city of Yerushalayim. And what happens? So the guards, Jewish guards, wanted to stab the body to make sure that he was really dead. Because after all, you can imagine, other people were trying this also, to pretend that they were dead, to get out. So the student said, Chas HaShalom, how can you do this? This is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's the Gadol Hador. He's the great rabbi of the generation. You can't stab him. Okay, they get through security, they come out. Right? Lid of the casket pops open. Who comes out? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's standing there in front of Vespasian. Vespasian says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I've heard about you. And obviously you risked your life to go ahead and get out of the city. Tell me, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked ultimately again for three things. Said three things. Number one, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha. Ultimately again, give me, spare the Sanhedrin, the high court. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai felt Jerusalem was going to fall. So he wanted to go ahead and sustain at least the future of the Jewish people. So he asked for three different things. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai then comes back into Yerushalayim. Listen to this story. Who confronts him? Rabbi Akiva. This was the Chevra then. Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you're a fool. Vespasian asked you what you wanted. He would have given you anything. What should you have asked for? What should Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai have asked for? What should he have asked for? He should have asked for Vespasian to turn his army around and spare Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Akiva gives it to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And all the other rabbis jump on the bandwagon and they're bashing Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You fool. You squandered such an opportunity to save the Jewish people. And instead, you asked for three things. Okay, meaningful things, but you could have asked for literally, again, the city of Yerushalayim to be spared. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai responds with one phrase, tafasta meruba lo tafasta, which literally means when you try to grab a lot, sometimes you end up with nothing. So I remember when I was young, there was like one of these games, like one of these television shows, that like it was geared towards kids, that you know they had for adults also, but you know you would get like 5 minutes in like a toy store, right? You get five minutes in a toy store, right? And whatever you could gather up, you know, in that was yours, and it was always very interesting, right? Because you would have two different kinds of people. I see that people who would just try to like throw their arms around whatever they could, and they'd end up usually dropping half of it. And whatever they did get, it wasn't even necessarily stuff that was meaningful, good. Or you had other people who are much more methodical, right? They would end up with much fewer items, but they got exactly what they wanted to get, and they held on to it. Since Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, here was the deal. Vespasian gave me one chance to ask for stuff. Had I asked for something too big, and he said no, Vespasian wouldn't have said, okay, what else would you like? It was a one-time shot. It was a one-time shot. So I felt that if I went too big and I got a no, I would have walked away empty-handed. So instead, I decided to ask for something smaller, recognizing that I had a much greater probability of getting that request granted. So this was the machlokas. This was the dispute between Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva felt Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai squandered his opportunity. You fool. You could have asked for everything, but instead you just got these small, meaningful, but small requests. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, I'm afraid that if I asked for something too big, and the answer was no, that I would have walked away with nothing. So I'll ask you, who was right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai or Rabbi Akiva? What would you say? It's a machlokas. It's a machlokas. Good. Always a safe answer. Can never go wrong with that with any Judaic question. Good. What do you think? I'm sorry? They're both right. Good. Good. Any other thoughts? The truth is like this. We don't know. We really don't know. Maybe Vespasian would have turned around. Right? Maybe Vespasian would have been taken. After all, again, Vespasian didn't have to give Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai anything. He didn't have to offer him anything. He didn't owe him anything. Yet you see that he was clearly moved enough by this heroic gesture that he felt compelled to do something. Maybe had Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, put in an impassioned plea to spare Jerusalem, maybe he would have done it. Maybe he would have. Or maybe he wouldn't have. And maybe Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would have ended up, would have kind of left empty-handed. The profundity of that story is that sometimes we are faced with dramatic life decisions. And each of those decisions, right, each of those pathways carries with them their own benefits and their own detriments. And there is not a clear decision to be made. You got to make the best decision you know, recognizing that maybe you're right or maybe you're wrong. Like, I often think to myself, probably the only time Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva really understood who was right and who was wrong was when they went up to Shamayim. I'm sure they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what would have happened? But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made the best decision he could with the information he had at hand in the moment in which he found himself. And to me, I always find this as a profound metaphor for life, right? Because we go through life and we're always faced with decisions we have to make. And there are some decisions that you know, this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad, this is what I need to do and this is what I need to avoid. But then there's like a lot of other decisions in life that I'm at a crossroads and I really don't know what is the right decision to make. I really don't know. And at the end of the day, even afterwards, you know, sometimes you make a decision and then afterwards you realize you were right or you were wrong. But a lot of times in life, there are major decisions I have to make and I won't even know later on, was I right or was I wrong? So, you know, sometimes what people end up doing is, therefore, because they're scared of whether it's right or it's wrong, what do? They do nothing. Inaction. But it's important to understand that inaction is also... Hey, how are you? Right? But it's important to also understand that inaction is also a decision. Choosing to do nothing is in and of itself a decision as well. And I think Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai teaches us that in life, You got to make decisions. Are you going to make the right one all of the time? No one does. Are you going to make the wrong one all of the time? Yeah, some people do. Some people do. But you know what? That's life. That's life. At the end of the day, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai teaches us, take in all the information, make the best decision you can in accordance with where you are in that moment in life. Obviously, it's always good retrospectively to analyze my decisions, but sometimes I never really know if the decisions I made or the paths that I chose were the right ones or the wrong ones. And the good news is, all that Kodesh Baruch Hu, all God asks of us in life, is to try our best to choose wisely. And as long as we do that, as long as we exhibit that type of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai life heroism, whether you choose right or you choose wrong, you did your job by making a decision. So we should be zochei mi'aretz Hashem, that halavai, Hashem should inspire us with wisdom and with confidence to make good decisions. And when we make poor decisions, Hashem should give us the wisdom and the courage to try to correct them. But more often in life, Hashem should just give us the courage not to second guess ourselves. And when we make a decision, and when we go down a path, that's what it is. That's what it is. It turns out better, turns out worse. I course correct, I can course correct. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, probably for the rest of his life wondered, did I make the right decision, did I not make the decision? A doctor for Rabbi Tzadok, and ultimately to spare the Davidic line. So again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, probably went to his grave wondering, could I have saved Yerushalayim? I like to think that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees us here, gathered for a beautiful lunch and a little bit of learning on 7510 7 Mile Lane, right? And sees, you know what? Obviously, it worked out because thousands of years later, we're still here. Could it have been different? Could always be different. But at the end of the day, sometimes life is just having the courage to make a decision, move yourself forward, and don't look back. It has been a privilege to be able to learn with all of you today. I don't know, what's the rest of the program? Is there a program? We have more? Okay. Enjoy the rest of the program. Enjoy lunch. And really, it is a personal privilege to have all of you here in the shul. And we should be zocha to gather together for many happy occasions in the future.
Okay. Have a great day. Sorry for I was a little bit late.
Oh, you came on time.
Okay, great.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Settle down.
That's what I figured. That's what I figured. We've got a little time to socialize. Good. Beautiful. This is like a magic show over here. You know?